Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
A lot of people interested in genealogy these days. A lot of people interested in finding out what their roots are. One of the places that you might not think of in terms of research, in terms of finding out who was in your family or who lived in your town, is your local cemetery. Some of the cemeteries in the Western Pennsylvania area, the Mon Valley area, date back, well, there are some that date back to Revolutionary War times, but many of them date back to the pre-Civil War era. One man who is doing a lot of work in conserving some of our historic cemeteries is Ellis Michaels. He's from Pitcairn. You may have read about him recently in the Tribune Review, but he is a conservator at Homestead Cemetery in Munhall, and also works to preserve cemeteries throughout Western Pennsylvania. Good morning, Ellis.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk to us this morning a little bit about your work. By accurate, you live in Pitcairn, but you work at Homestead Cemetery primarily.
I actually work as a registered nurse in Jefferson Hospital.
Okay.
And the cemetery conservation is sort of an odd hobby.
I don't think it's so odd. When did you get interested in doing this?
Well, I've had a lifelong interest in genealogy, and a lot of my family is really from the back farmlands of earlier Pennsylvania counties. Mm-hmm. And many of my ancestors are quite literally buried in the middle of cornfields in old family farm cemeteries. The problem that you run into is that, you know, people abandon the cemeteries and the gravestones fall into disrepair. And you can't really find people, especially in these rural areas, who either, one, know how to do the conservation, or two, if you can find a monument company, you know, they don't want to go fix your old tombstone. They want to sell you a new one. And then you lose the historic value of the original markers that the family had placed. So I started reading and following several groups on the internet and started to attend some workshops just to learn the basics on what is the proper and safe and effective methods to try to conserve historic grave markers.
You were working through the National Graves Registration Project, which I think is an adjunct of the Veterans Administration, the Federal Veteran Administration. Is that correct?
Well, I'm working with a group called the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War. We are descendants of Civil War soldiers who work to try to keep the memory of their service. And with the Grave Registration Project, right now, we're trying to document the graves of all Civil War veterans here in Allegheny County. And I sort of branch off a little bit when I'm able to find gravestones that are completely deteriorated. Then I work with the VA to try to obtain brand new stones, and then I will go ahead and install them for them.
I want to jump back a while because you said something that is intriguing to me. We're talking with Ellis Michaels. He is helping conserve our local history through the headstones and gravestones in local cemeteries, including, as I just mentioned, veterans of the Civil War in the Mon Valley area. But I want to jump back. You mentioned that your family, you said, was some of the rural early counties of Pennsylvania, and you also mentioned that you have developed an interest over the years in genealogy. How far back are you able to trace your family's lineage now?
I tell my children that our families were the first ones to be thrown out of Europe as soon as Columbus came back.
Okay.
many branches of my family go back well into the 1600s.
Okay.
You know, we didn't come over on the Mayflower, but we were a couple ships behind.
How did you come to learn how to do this research, first of all? Where did you get the interest in genealogy?
Like a lot of people back in the 70s, there was a TV show called Roots, and that made me interested. And I was able to meet, there were a few other family members much older than me that had done research, and I pestered them until they shared with me what they had learned. And then I've just continued throughout the years. The really big advances has been the increase in the amount of material that is now available, especially online, which has made it so much easier to try to do this research, in that, you know, instead of having to travel to a historical society or library in Franklin County, I can just oftentimes on my computer find enough information for my needs.
The digitizing of just over the last 10 or 20 years of all the census records, the Ellis Island immigration records, revolutionized so many things. I hadn't thought about how it has revolutionized genealogy.
Well, not only that, but also you have, there's actually several grave site websites now that you can use to help. One in particular is Find a Grave.
You're active on that. I found you in doing some research into you. I found you on that. Not your grave, well, thank goodness, but I found that you were a contributor.
Yeah, I'm not dead yet.
Yeah.
But with the Homestead Cemetery, because we don't have any full-time staff, for people who want to try to find their family grave, we've been going through the records and putting enough of the information on to Find a Grave, so that hopefully someone looking for their great-great uncle will be able to find their grave and at least maybe even find a picture.
We have to take a break here in a minute or two. When we come back from that, I want to talk to you about, get you to give us some tips, tips of the trade on how, for people who are interested in their genealogy, how they can get started with that. But I want to explore something else. You're a board member, I believe, at Homestead Cemetery, correct?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Homestead Cemetery, because they've had their struggles here recently. How old is that cemetery, and who were some of the people who were buried there?
Well, the Homestead Cemetery started in the 1880s. It was put on top of the hill, technically in Munhall. Mm-hmm. But it was what I would say would be the Protestant cemetery. You have Mary Magdalena right across the road, and then you have John's Orthodox right across the road. And then we were sort of for the Methodist and the Presbyterians and such. It ran for 120, 130 years. And about 2015, they ran out of money. Because once you run out of burial plots, there's no more money coming in. And we don't really know exactly the circumstances. But in about 2015, they literally padlocked the gates and walked away. So after a couple years of the cemetery sitting vacant and not being cared for, and the grass growing 2-3 feet high, several local residents took it upon themselves to cut the padlocks and to go in. And I don't completely understand how they were able to take control through the legal issues. But I joined about 2-3 years ago, because I have family buried in there. And then they found out that I knew how to do some restoration. And then I was on the board all of a sudden.
I think some of the strikers from the 1892 famous Homestead Steel Strike, I think, are buried there amongst other people.
We have three. We have three of the strikers, John Morris. And the other two, I don't remember. We also have the burial spot for Cum Posey, who was the owner of the Homestead Grays. A lot of the early families of Homestead and Munhall are buried there. Several Negro baseball players are buried there. I think at last, going through the records, we think there's about 17,000 residents of our cemetery.
When we get back, I want to talk to you about what are some tips for people getting started in genealogy? I also want to talk to you about this craft of what you have to do when you have a tombstone that maybe dates from the Civil War era or earlier, and you have to try to conserve it and get the information off of it, because I know that is the first step for a lot of people when they are researching family history, okay?
Okay.
Ellis Michaels is our guest. He is a registered nurse by profession, but a cemetery conservator by vocation, or avocation, I suppose it is. And we're going to be talking with him a little bit more this morning. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
Welcome back. Our guest this morning has a very unusual avocation. He is Ellis Michaels. He is a cemetery conservator. He is working with a group called the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War in local cemeteries around the Pittsburgh area to help conserve some of the historic graves and grave markers in those cemeteries. He's also a board member at the historic Homestead Cemetery located in Munhall. And that's his... And people must ask you, this is an unusual hobby, Ellis. Do people think it's morbid? Do they think it's spooky to be working in a cemetery?
You get a lot of people who think that, you know, aren't you, you know, worried you're working in a cemetery? And I tell them that the only thing I'm afraid of in the cemetery is groundhogs and snakes. If you've been down there 100 years, you're not coming back without a major intervention from our God. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of being in the cemetery itself. No.
I know a lot of people, too, who you mentioned McKeesport and Versailles Cemetery, which I'm very familiar with. You mentioned Allegheny Cemetery down in Lawrenceville, who use them as places for contemplation and, you know, who take long walks through some of our local cemeteries, especially some of the larger cemeteries like McKeesport and Versailles. Do you find solace? Do you find peace and quiet when you're working there?
Well, these cemeteries were designed to be places where people would enjoy spending time in. They were meant to reflect pastoral scenes so that people would come and actually spend time with their loved ones, but also to take walks with them. So that's definitely the intention. And I think that it is important that if you find it comforting to walk through there, yes, you should be allowed. The only thing at like Homestead, we asked, we don't mind you letting your dog walk with you, but of course, pick up afterwards.
Yeah. Dogs will do what dogs will do. I think it was not uncommon in my grandparents' generation, especially on Memorial Day or what they used to call Decoration Day, for people to go to the cemetery and have a picnic to decorate that's why it was called Decoration Day. You went to the family grave, you decorated it, and you stayed and had lunch then.
Oh, yes, very common. And again, that was the intent when they started to design these municipal cemeteries. A peaceful place for people to come remember those that have gone before us.
So genealogy, before we get into especially, I want to talk to you about some of the do's and don'ts if somebody has a historic churchyard or a farm. You mentioned farm family cemeteries that maybe they've inherited, maybe they've purchased the property and it's got some. And I want to ask you what they should do and what they shouldn't do if they come into that situation. But before that, I want to ask you about the genealogy aspect of your work. If someone is listening to this and they've gotten interested maybe recently in finding out about their family history, where's the first place they can start? Because that's got to be intimidating for people.
Well, one of the things I like to caution people about starting genealogy is like doing a crossword puzzle from 150 years ago, where a lot of the clues no longer make sense in today's context. But also 50 years ago, someone tried to do the crossword puzzle in pen and they got the answers wrong. So the best place to start is, one, if there are older members in the family or other family members who have been interested, talk to them. and try to gather as much information as you can. And then what you do is you try to document. Okay, I was told that Grandpap came over in 1892 and he came through Ellis Island. Well, you can look online at some of the records from Ellis Island and see, well, it does this document. Can I find his naturalization records? Do they support what I have been told? Always try to document whatever you have been told or find. And be very cautious with online family trees that have already been put on some of the websites. Not everybody is as careful as you would hope they would be. And just because they found a census record for John Smith doesn't mean that's always the same John Smith that is your great-great-grandfather. But websites like Ancestry.com, there's also the Church of Latter-day Saints with FamilySearch.com, and there's a number of them that you can go on and you can try to find a lot of the records that you need. But you start with yourself and work your way back carefully, always documenting if you can what you find, and just being cautious that there's not it bad information out there.
We talked last week to a historian by the name of Tom White, who writes about Western Pennsylvania folklore, and one of the things that he said is you can't always trust the printed, you can't always trust the internet websites, but you can always trust the printed material, because sometimes, especially 100 years ago, they weren't quite as scrupulous about their facts either, or they may not, as you mentioned. A lot of these things have only come to light in the last 20 years. They've been digitized and dragged out of basements or off of microfiche. Document, 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 you're saying, and work backwards from yourself, from your own mom and dad, and then from grandparents and so forth.
Yeah, what was it Reagan said? Trust but verify.
Trust but verify, yes. Ellis Michaels is a conservator. He's a registered nurse by trade, but by avocation, he helps restore tombstones in local cemeteries. He's also on the board of directors of the Historic Homestead Cemetery up there in Munhall. We have another break coming up. Time goes quickly, but let's jump right into this here before we take the break, and we can come back to it. A lot of old properties around here, a lot of old churches, which in some cases have been deconsecrated and sold off, and maybe they have a churchyard, a graveyard next to it. Maybe you purchased a family farm out in Westmoreland or Washington counties, and it's got a few graves on it. I think that was a common practice back in the old day, wasn't it, to have a churchyard or a family farm cemetery?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So you get the property, and you find these old tombstones, and what's the first thing you should do?
The first thing you should always do is remember this phrase. Do no harm. Don't do anything that's going to harm these stones. Even though they are stone, they are very oftentimes fragile. They've been sitting out in the weather for 100 to 150 years, and that will take its toll on them.
And what are they generally made of? Modern day are probably made of what, marble or granite, but in the old days, what were they made of?
Well, in the original early settlers, you used whatever stones you could quarry locally. So a lot of it is slate or sandstone.
Or limestone, probably, too.
Well, in the 1840s, 1850s, when they completed the railroads and the canals, then it was more cost-effective to be able to bring the marble and the limestone stones. And so about then you start to see them switching over to the marble stones. And then in the late 1880s, George Westinghouse perfected his air-driven tools that made it possible to conveniently carve into granite. And so then you start to see more granite stones coming into place, which definitely hold up much better.
But sandstone, as you mentioned, which is very common around here, you can dig it up frequently, is fairly soft. Limestone itself is also fairly soft. If you've ever worked with limestone slag or marble in your backyard, you know it can be chipped fairly easily. So that sandstone can be chipped or damaged fairly easily.
Oh, very easily. And the other problem you get with a lot of the slate and the sandstones is that they sort of what we call delaminate, meaning that they were laid down layer after layer after layer over eons, And sometimes as the water soaks into the stone and then you get a freeze-thaw cycle, that'll actually break the layers apart. And you'll see a lot of these old stones where it's fallen off like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle.
Just like when you're driving through a canyon or on some of the roads around here and you see the cliffs, the sandstone is coming off in chunks or in layers, as you mentioned. These old tombstones can do the same thing.
Yes, definitely. And those are extremely difficult and require special skills from a conservator if you want to try to restore them. That is way above my skill set.
We're talking with Ellis Michaels. He is a cemetery conservator, and if you would like to get in touch with him, find out more about his work, you can reach him through the Homestead Cemetery's website at thehomesteadcemetery.com. You can also call them at 412-294-3189. From the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, and we'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striffler's has provided compassionate, professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striffler's offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company, Design Monuments, Striffler's also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at strifflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
You probably also run into headstones that have been damaged by vandals, for instance. They've been kicked over or knocked over, or in some cases, maybe animals or the weather have knocked them over and broken them.
Another big thing is trees.
Yeah.
You know, the limbs will fall off or the tree will fall over, and it tends to knock them over or break them in half. And that requires carefully assessing the stone and coming up with a plan. Can it be repaired? Do I have the skill set necessary to repair it? Or should I just try to protect it as best as I can and leave it alone and hope that at some point in the future, another conservator with better skills will come along?
How do you repair a broken tombstone? What are the tools and the skills that you would need to use to repair one?
Well, like most things, you're going to find that there's a wide variety of beliefs about... Hold on just a second. Mm-hmm. Hi, dear. My wife just... There's a wide variety of beliefs about what is the proper way. I will... Let's say I have a marble tombstone that's in fairly good shape. Otherwise, it's just been broken off halfway up. I can use a little bit of special stone epoxy that you buy from a conservator, but you have to do very sparingly, because one of the things to remember is these stones are porous, mm-hmm. and they actually wick water up through them to where it will be evaporated. And if you put an impermeable barrier between the two halves, then the water will just build up underneath there, and then you're going to get the freeze-thaw cycles.
And they explode and crack, yeah.
So you just use a sparing small amount of epoxy if needed. And then there is special material called Lithomex that comes from France. There's only one company in Pennsylvania that carries it. It is a stone repair material that you can tint to try to approximate the same color as the stone, and you can use that to fill in any rest of the crack, but that will allow the movement of the moisture through the stone after the repair.
You mentioned something else that I think is an important tip, and I don't want it to let go on past. I see and I hear this a lot of times now. I'm friends with a lot of people who fix up antique cars or antique radios and televisions and things. And you mentioned something that I have heard from those friends, and that is, if I can't fix it, maybe set it aside until someone else comes along who can fix it, rather than trying to do an amateur repair job. I think that's an important lesson. You said there are some things that you won't touch. You'll set it aside.
You need to know your limits. I mean, you need to know what skills that you do have. And you need to be comfortable with saying either, yes, this is something that I can accomplish, but you really need to be comfortable saying, I don't want to do any harm to this stone. That stone may be one of the few memories or memorabilia of someone's life here on this earth. And after they passed, someone loved them enough that they erected this stone to honor their memory. And what you don't want to do is slap a bunch of Portland cement all over it. Sure. So that it just gets worse and worse as the years go by.
Do people still take charcoal rubbings or tracings of gravestones and headstones? And is that a good way to preserve the lettering that's on them?
Please don't do that.
Oh, okay.
Please don't do that.
Yeah.
The problem is that the surface of the stone is very often more fragile than the inner surface. So you're pressing on the surface of the stone, which will cause even if it's just a couple granules from the top layer, they will then fall off. You're causing the further erosion of the inscription.
You're abrading. You're making an abrasive because you're using charcoal and tracing paper, and it's rubbing the surface.
It's rubbing, it's pushing it, and it's causing damage. I tell people to use a mirror.
Okay.
If they're having issues, usually about noon, you go out to the cemetery, the sun directly overhead, and then you take a mirror and you angle it from the side so that the reflected light is just hitting the surface of the stone, but not going directly into the inscription. And you would find more often than not that you will be able to read the lettering and get a decent picture. And that causes absolutely no harm to the stone.
So with you use a digital camera or the camera on your phone and you take a good picture and you use that mirror to cast the shadow, to make the shadows deepen in the lettering.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what they used to tell us in Scouts, take only pictures, leave only footprints. That's good advice if you're doing research in the cemetery as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
If people hear this and either they want to get in touch with you or they want to get into, we haven't even touched on the fact that in some cases you have been replacing headstones. In very short, very briefly, what do you do when you have to, when is the decision made that we have to replace the grave marker for someone?
I don't replace civilian gravestones.
These are for the Civil War veterans.
For the Civil War veterans, if the stone is severely eroded and very difficult to read, even if I have tried proper cleaning techniques, I gather enough documentation to prove that the soldier did serve, that they were honorably discharged, and that they are buried in the cemetery. And then you always have to ask permission of the cemetery. It's their grounds. They're the ones that are in charge of everything. And then you petition with an application called VA-40-1330, and you send it to the Veterans Administration. And if you have all your ducks in a row, they will send you a brand new stone, either granite or marble, or if you wish, brass, and they will send it to you for free. But you are responsible for paying to have it installed. And that's where I taught myself how to install many of these stones so that I can help the local cemeteries get them in.
You can reach Ellis Michaels through Homestead Cemetery. You can go to their website, thehomesteadcemetery.com, and they've got maps and event listings up there of things that are happening in the historic Homestead Cemetery where Ellis is a board member. You can also reach the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War if you'd like to find out more about that by going to their website, SUVOW.org. Ellis, thank you so much for this. This is fascinating, and I feel like we could talk more about this, but unfortunately, we only do have.
Thank you. I greatly enjoyed it.
And thank you all for listening this week to Two Rivers 30 Minutes. So long for now.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at TubeCityOnline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at TubeCityTiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659.
And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.